Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Happy Friday. It's Party Friday. Chuck and Julie are taking the day off. I think they're heading south to go play golf or something. Good for them. So this is your guest host, Mark Poff, filling in, retired detective from El Paso County. So we're going to talk about a few things today, and we're going to end up with due process. I want to have a nice conversation about that and kind of lay things out. Opportunity for whoever wants to talk. You can call in at 888-627-6008. If I happen to see you raise your hand here on Zoom, I'll call you out, or you can just start talking on Zoom and ask me any question you want. But if you saw the kind of the teaser on Wednesday, I usually joke that usually something happens that I find very entertaining whenever Chuck and Julie take the day off. And surely something happened today that I found very entertaining, being someone who used to be in law enforcement, now works as an expert, predominantly for defense attorneys in criminal cases throughout the country. I obviously have been in a lot of courtrooms, and I'm sure Chuck has as well. And I want to thank Chuck and Julie for letting me guest host today. I always love doing that. And I think they're the greatest, and everyone should understand there's not very many people that are giving you a forum or a podcast or someplace where you can catch up on state and local government issues. Most people want to talk about national issues. So I really appreciate the opportunity to listen to Chuck and Julie about things going on in the state of Colorado, because it's pretty entertaining here as well, especially with some of the crazy gun laws that have been passed and signed by POLIS here recently. But so today I'm all set to come down and start working on due process, because that's really the focus. And I wanted to talk a little bit about tariffs and stuff. But then I look at Fox News and I see this thing about, you know, lapse in judgment and this judge that got arrested up in Milwaukee. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. You know, occasionally judges do get arrested. They just arrested a judge in New Mexico as well. And it does happen that judges do things that they shouldn't and they get arrested. But this case I thought was going to be a little entertaining. So I went and looked it up. I actually found online the arrest warrant affidavit for the criminal complaint against the judge, Hannah Dugan, who's a dumbass. I'm just going to say that right now. Don't think I'm ever going to be in her courtroom, so I can call her a dumbass, because she is a dumbass. So I read through this, and it is so interesting. And I watched Fox a little bit. I actually had to work today, had some Zoom calls and stuff that I was working on. But in between that, around lunchtime, I hit Fox News and they were talking about this case. And I found it interesting. So this thing is like 14 or 15 pages long, the complaint. And it's very interesting. So I want to tell you a story. I've read through this. I find this so entertaining, having been someone who was a prior detective. So I worked in the courthouse a bunch, you know, a lot of cases went to criminal court as a defense expert, or an expert that works, like I said, predominantly for the defense. I'm in the courtroom all the time. I understand procedurally how courtrooms work. I actually sat on a jury one time, which was very enlightening as well for me. So you have this courtroom, and let's lay out the courtroom. So you got to go through security, usually on the first floor. And this was a local courthouse, so this wasn't a federal courthouse or anything. It's just a regular court house building. But you got to go through security and everything, and then you usually go up to the floor of your courtroom. Then you go through the public entrance, and there's what they refer to as a gallery, which is where we as citizens, witnesses, would sit. And then you have different areas of the courtroom. You obviously have where the judge sits, usually right up front, elevated. And then you usually next to that or close to it, you'll have where the witness bench or the witness seat or whatever, the witness chair. And normally that's pretty near the judge. And sometimes it's near the jury, sometimes it's not, but normally you have the jury off to one side, the jury box, and then you have the tables where the prosecution and the defense sit. And you have this layout, and usually they have like a gate. It's not like a door, it's just a little swinging gate typically. Sometimes there's not even a gate there, but you can tell the difference between the gallery, the public area, and the actual active courtroom area where all the players sit. So what you have usually once a week is you have a thing that's referred to as docket day. That's pretty universal. I've seen that in many different states. And typically a judge will take one day a week and they'll handle what's referred to as docket. So they have little proceedings and they may have a whole bunch of people that just got arrested. And so, they have to have arraignments and things like that. So one day a week they'll do that. Some places they may do it in the morning or an hour or two, or when they're in trial, some other judge will do it, or they'll rotate or whatever. But most of the stuff that goes on in a courtroom is not a trial. It's usually some type of court proceedings like hearings, motion hearings, arraignments, bond hearings, all kinds of stuff. So you have someone who gets arrested for domestic abuse, and his name is Eduardo Flores Ruiz. Okay, so that's our illegal alien in this story today. And he had a hearing. So he was going to go to court about 8:30 in the morning to this hearing. Well, ICE found out about it. And I've been involved in this before where I've had cases where I thought somebody was going to show up. I actually had a case one time where I arrested an individual and I thought for sure her boyfriend was going to show up. And her boyfriend had a warrant. So I went to the hearing, and if he showed up, I was planning to arrest him, and I did. And I'll get back to that. I'll kind of interject that because that's my experience as a detective arresting somebody out of a courtroom. And it happens. It's actually fairly common. Most arrests, or a lot of arrests, happen in the courtroom, which makes sense. They go in for a hearing and the judge is like, arrest him, take him in custody. And then boom, they're arrested. So a lot of the deputies who are officers who work in the courtroom make arrests routinely every day. Out of the courtroom. It's not an unusual event for someone to get arrested out of a courtroom. So he's on his way. Our good buddy Flores, I'll just call him that, our illegal, is on his way to the courtroom. Judges in her chambers. ICE has figured out he's coming. And just to let you know, he's been deported once. He's already been deported once. So he's re-entered illegally. He's here in the United States. He's going for a hearing for domestic abuse. He beat up his wife, spouse, girlfriend, or whatever. This is not a good person. This is not a Marilyn, husband or whatever you want to say. And it's interesting, that he's there for this hearing and they know he's coming. And we've done this before in law enforcement when we know that somebody has a hearing. We're like, hey, we want to arrest this guy, so we'll get our warrants in order. We'll go down to the courthouse. So that's what ICE now is, multiple jurisdiction or individuals from different jurisdictions. So there was ICE agents, a couple FBI agents. There's six of them. So there's six people to arrest this one guy in a misdemeanor county judge or county courtroom. So they all go down to the courthouse, go up to the sixth floor. But what's interesting is even trying to get into the courthouse, they go through, and this is kind of interesting because a lot of courthouses actually have a special entrance for law enforcement because they're packing, they're carrying guns. And they'll go through that and they'll just check their badges, make sure everything's cool, and they'll let them in to the courthouse. Well, here they wanted them to go through security. And it's like, guys, we got guns and stuff. So they show their badges and stuff. And they're like, well, we want to see. Well, actually, they showed them their credentials. They said, we want to see your badges too. And they showed them their badge. And they said, well, we're going to have to check with a supervisor. This is BS. This is just crazy talk. These are cops that come into a courthouse all the time. When I was a cop, I went to the courthouse at least once or twice a month, armed. And I went through the separate entrance. No one ever questioned me. They knew who I was. I showed my credentials and I went in and went to my courtroom. And they usually give you a little pin so everybody in the courthouse could recognize who's got a weapon underneath that jacket. So they kind of, get in their way or hinder them on their way into the courthouse. So then they go up to the courtroom on the sixth floor. And I may even read you some of the things that are going on. Now, this affidavit was written by an FBI agent, Lindsay Schlomer, who specializes in public corruption crimes. Sounds convenient for this judge. So six agents, he'd been previously deported, returned illegally. Agents determined he had a criminal hearing that day, presented themselves, blah, 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 blah. So they go up and they're waiting outside the courtroom. And that's typically what they will do. They'll wait outside the courtroom and they'll wait until after the hearing because they want them to have their due process. How ironic. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So they'll usually let them go into the courtroom. And then when he exits the public exit, they'll arrest him and take him where he needs to be. So that was their plan. Well, I will tell you, some cops are better at covering than other cops. Typically, not too many people really, you know, would see me and say, oh, the dude, that's a cop. But I can tell you, when I go to the courthouse, I can normally look around and say, those three guys are cops. I mean, they got the look. So a defense attorney, if I read the affidavit right, a defense attorney who may or may not have been the one representing Mr. Flores Ruiz, recognized them as cops, walked over and started taking pictures of them with her phone. What's wrong with that picture? I mean, that's just jacked up. Then she goes into the courthouse. Somebody yells out, ICE is in the house. ICE is here. This is straight out of the affidavit that somebody in the courtroom says that. And what's interesting is where are they getting their testimony from? So this affidavit is written by witnesses or it's written by an FBI agent who they interviewed at the courtroom. It's her own people that are diming her out. The judges, the court officer who's the, I think he's a deputy that's working in there. He threw under the bus. There's prosecutors in the room. They threw the judge under the bus. So they interviewed a bunch of people and just members of the public that happened to be in there and asked them, you know, what happened? And they say that somebody came in and said, ICE is here. Well, obviously that would stir up a whole courtroom. And the judge, so this attorney, this defense attorney walked in, went to the judge. Now, when you're doing a docket day, it's a little bit chaotic. So the judge is sitting on the bench, but the clerk's there, and attorneys can just walk up to the clerk. And that's typically how it works. It's kind of like it's almost like night court. If you're watching night court a little bit, it's kind of chaotic like that. So this defense attorney walks up to the clerk and tells the clerk, hey, there's a bunch of ICE agents out there, and I think they want to arrest somebody, you know, that's here. And then the clerk goes and tells the judge. And then this is based on the courthouse, she gets visibly upset. Yeah, here it is. Judge Dugan became visibly angry and commented that the situation was absurd. This is from witnesses inside her courtroom. And then she stormed out of the courtroom and confronted these agents out in the hallway. And she told them they needed to leave the courthouse. She told him to leave the courthouse. She has no jurisdiction to do that. They're cops. They can go anywhere. In fact, they're federal agents. They can go anywhere they want. And then she started giving them a hard time about their type of warrant, that it wasn't a criminal warrant. It was an administrative warrant. And then she said, you need to go see the chief judge. And this is where it's a little bit different than what I heard on TV. I thought that she told him to go back to her chambers, her office, but that's not what she told him. She told him to go to the chief judge's chambers to make sure that they do it administratively right and get his approval. So she kind of confronted him and said, you need to do that. So they do that. They said, okay, fine. You go back in, do your courtroom. We'll go to the chief judge and we'll do this. Well, she didn't recognize all the cops. Now, typically cops don't hang out all together. They usually have people kind of spread out. So she addressed these individuals that she felt were cops and told them to go see the chief judge, which they did. But there was another cop that wasn't identified, and he just stayed there. You know, and the judge goes back into her courtroom. So what happens then is, this is real interesting, is she, the judge, appears to, this is what they're saying, pushing Flores Ruiz's case through. So she was expediting the hearing. So she didn't go in order. She said, let's do his case right away. So she called him up And then she expedited here. What they said was is that she basically said, you know what, we'll do this another day. I'm just going to bind this over for, and I'll give you another court date. You need to get out of here. So, okay. So she basically tells him, you need to get the hell out of Dodge. The cops are here for you. That in and of itself is a problem right there. But then the defense attorney and Mr. Flores Ruiz started heading for the public exit. And that's when she, the judge kind of freaks out. And the courtroom deputy, that's who's giving this testimony to the for the affidavit, saw Judge Dugan get up and heard the judge say something like, "Wait, come with me." So the judge stopped them from going out the normal exit, even though she had got them to go down to the lead judge for the courtroom. And then she did something that, according to the courtroom deputy, he's never seen before. She brought him up, and this guy even said that they looked confused. That even the defense attorney was kind of like, "What? You know what?" And she's like, "Come here, come here, come here." And then she understand the jury in a courtroom, they do not leave through the public entrance. They leave through a special door in the back. If you've ever been in a courtroom, you know how when that door opens and the jury comes out and they go, "All rise for the jury." So that's a separate door. And it's not to a public exit, it's to a private exit. So she takes them back into what's referred to, and every modern courtroom is set up like this, where they have this back hallway. And that's where they have all the secure rooms, judges' chambers, jury rooms, and all this other stuff. She takes them back into a secured area of the courthouse. And then she says, "You can go out this way. And you can bypass law enforcement who might be waiting for you in the public exit." So she openly was trying to help this individual evade. And this is a statement. I love reading statements out of the affidavit because this is what the FBI is using to arrest a judge. I love it. I love it. Defense attorneys and defendants who were not in custody never used the jury door. Never happened before. This is the courtroom deputy who's diming her out. It confused a lot of people in the room. What's interesting is the victims in his case understand that whenever someone from a domestic violence type case has a hearing, the victim or victims are notified so they can be there. They have a right to see what is going on with the individual that committed a crime against them, domestic abuse. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't even know. She ran like this little private hearing up in front, and they were not even advised that he was actually being processed or whatever the right term would be. And they weren't even told that, "Hey, by the way, we've kind of adjourned his case for today because we don't want the cops to get him." They weren't even told. And that's actually, that could be a violation of law as well, because there's victims' rights that, and there's laws in every state around what victim rights they have. So she might have violated, it probably was official misconduct and at a minimum what she did. But that's kind of interesting. And so here's the repercussions. So five of the six law enforcement officers that are there, federal agents to arrest this individual, are down at the lead judge, chief judge is Chambers. He's not there. But they got him on the phone and he said, "Look, just arrest him in a public place. Don't do it in a courtroom. Do it, blah, 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 blah. Do it in a public." And they said, "Okay, fine." So they're still on the phone. The other cop sees him heading for the elevator, the back, not the prime elevators, this other set of elevators, I guess, on the south side or something. And I guess he communicates with the other saying, "Hey, guy, this guy's on the move." So a bunch of them go down there and try to get down the main elevators. As it turns out, the one cop that stayed is actually riding down in the elevator with Mr. Flores Ruiz. And he's kind of relaying to the other ones that, "Hey, just to let he's getting out of the courthouse." And so they're all, you can imagine everyone scrambling. If you've ever watched The Fugitive, they're all scrambling to go after the fugitive. And they finally catch up to him outside the courthouse. So, because of this judge's actions, they could have arrested him in a very confined, secure area of that courthouse. And I've done this before. Very secured, It's very safe for everybody. But instead, they had to do it out on the street. And when they notified, hey, Mr. Flores Ruiz, FBI, we have a warrant, he took off running. So they had to get in a foot pursuit. Somebody could have gotten hurt. And they're outside. Maybe he had buddies in a car with weapons. I mean, this whole thing could have really gone bad. And fortunately, it did not. But there's a lot more to this story than what you even got on Fox News today, that just sounded like she helped the guy out a back door or whatever. She actively said, or protected, she prevented law enforcement, federal agents from erecting, that's not the right word, making an arrest of someone they had a warrant for. I think there's other crimes they could charge her with other than this. They charge her with obstructing and concealing an individual, so he wouldn't be arrested. But so understand that most judges don't mind if you arrest someone in their courtroom. I've had it a couple times that you actually go to the judge ahead of time and you say, look, I've got an arrest, a federal warrant, for this guy. If he shows up for the hearing, we'd like just to arrest him, because the state is like, look, feds supersede the state. So if you have a federal arrest warrant for an individual, the judge will usually be like, and I heard of one time, I was supposed to be there, but I didn't make it. The judge actually said, he goes, hey, we have Mr. So-and-so here today for his bond hearing or whatever. I don't think that's going to be necessary, because it's my understanding, I've been advised, there's two federal agents that have a warrant for his arrest. So why don't we just take this time to have him placed in custody? And then they come up, it's safe. You know he doesn't have a weapon because he had to go through security. So it's a great place to arrest people, is at a courthouse. So understand this when we're talking about this dumbass judge, what's her name? Hannah Dumbass Dugan, that she gave more. She was more concerned about a defendant who had abused his spouse, girlfriend, whatever. She was more concerned that he didn't get deported than the due process of the victims of his crime. She totally ignored the victims that, or victims that were in that courtroom that day. And she did everything in her power to help this illegal alien to evade arrest. Now, understand this: judges think they are God in their courtrooms, and typically they are. 99% of the judges I've run across in my career are great people. They try to be fair, just, honest. They keep a very controlled courtroom. They don't allow for outbursts. Everything is respectful. Everybody respects everybody. And it's a great experience. That has been my experience in 99% of the courtrooms. I've only seen one or two judges in my entire career that I was kind of like, that's probably not the best way for a judge to be acting. But whenever I see a judge putting criminals ahead of victims for whatever reason, she's obviously an activist judge. She'll never judge again. She'll never sit on the bench again. Pam Bondi, who is my hero, this judge is done. There is no way they're going to let her ever sit on the bench again, because she's an activist judge, and she couldn't help herself. What she should have done, even though she was an activist, is she said, "Well, there's one fish that's not going to get away," because the cops had their act together and they came and got her. But this was dangerous, what she did. This was very dangerous. She doesn't know this person. She didn't know this guy from squat, but yet she's willing to go out on the limb, lose her job, lose her career. She's going to get disbarred. She may even do time in a federal jail. We'll see. Very interested to see the outcome. I think this is going to be very entertaining. But she was willing to risk all of that over an illegal alien who's a wife beater. You talk about having priorities jacked, she does. And this is the issue, that one of the issues that's going on nationally is you have these Democrats, these liberals that are influencing people all the way, not just mentally ill people, but all the way up to a judge in Milwaukee to do things that they know are wrong. out of activism, you know, to be an activist over something that an illegal alien deported before came back in, beats up his spouse or girlfriend, and she's willing to lose her job, her life, her career, her freedom over someone like that and not even advocate for the victim who was sitting in the courtroom the whole time. Is this one jacked up story or what? So when we're talking about due process, and I love the word due process, this is a word that you hear all the time. But understand whose due process did she violate? Because that woman sitting back there, the victim of this crime, was owed her due process, which she didn't get. He didn't really get due process either. So let's talk about due process. So we're going to switch it up a little bit. I love this story. I'm going to be really paying attention to see what happens to her. I hope she goes to jail because you've got to make examples of judges who are activists instead of saying, and I had to say this a bunch as a cop, as a detective, as a street cop, not really what I believe in, not something I support, but I took an oath to the badge to protect the Constitution of the state of Colorado and the Constitution of the United States. So the laws and the Constitution supersede my thoughts or my feelings or my activism or whatever. So I'm going to make decisions based on the law, not how I feel. She, on the other hand, this stupid judge, she lost everything, her whole career, over someone she'll probably never meet again, who's going to get deported back to Mexico. And it's like all these people keying Teslas and all this other stuff, you know, blowing up whatever. They could spend some hard time in federal prison and they're going to realize, hopefully, unless they're totally mentally ill, why did I do that? You did it because you were BS'd by a bunch of liberal Democrats or liberals, activists, who got you so riled up in your head that you couldn't think for yourself. And I've said this many times before. Republicans think for themselves. That's why you can't herd Republicans. It's like herding cats because you have a whole bunch of Republicans, like you have the Tea Party people, you have the grassroots, you have the rhinos, you have all these different type of Republicans, and they can't seem to agree on anything. Well, Democrats, they tell you what to do, and everybody follows, and then all these people are brainwashed and basically giving up their lives for stupid stuff like Teslas or Elon Musk. You know, who's going to be back in private life here in about 30 days. It's just, they're mentally not capable of understanding this stuff, where Republicans wouldn't do that. Republicans would be like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, that's crazy. You know, so let's talk about due process, because that's all the Democrats are saying right now. And just to let you know, today's show is brought to you by El Salvador, the number one resort area and vacation spot for liberal Democrats, because that's where they're all going for some stupid reason. I would rather go to Hawaii, sit on the beach, you know, and just know that illegal aliens are being deported. So they're all saying it's not about the individual. Okay. It's all about the process, that we've got to make sure if we don't ensure the process for them, then we'll lose the process for us. And so they try to do this fear-mongering, which is, and I love this term, disappearing people. Nobody's disappearing people. That's just a stupid statement by stupid people. Oh, by the way, they're dumbasses. Nobody's disappearing. We know we're the guy who got snagged up in Maryland. We know he's in El Salvador. We went to a senator from Maryland went down and had margaritas with him. So we know that he didn't disappear. No one's disappearing anybody. And just because they're deporting illegals doesn't mean, you know, they're suggesting that they're going to come from the black and the brown people next. No, they're not. They are enforcing the law. That's all they're doing. And all the Democrats are trying to do is they're trying to run out the clock. Their view is quite simple. If we can run out the clock, get rid of Donald Trump in 3 more years, maybe we can get one of our people in the presidency, and then we can start fixing everything right back again. So it's just a delay tactic to keep all the illegals in and not get them deported in the next 3.5 years before Trump's term is over. That's all it is. They're running out the clock. But if it's in a basketball game or hockey or whatever, and they're saying, oh, they're running out the clock. Well, they're starting to do this in the first period. I mean, right from the beginning, they're playing rope-a-dope if they're boxing. They're playing four corners if they're playing basketball. And they're just trying to run out the clock. So let's talk about the Bill of Rights just here real quick. So there was 10 Bill of Rights that were ratified on December 15th, 1791. We're all kind of knowledgeable about the first 10. Actually, I'm not. There's a few that are real popular. You know, the first one, freedom of religion, speech, press, right? Second one, bear arms, things like that. So the fifth one is the one that we're really interested in. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in the Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights. But one of them towards the end, it says, nor that a person cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Doesn't say anything about deportation. Doesn't say you can't be deported. Are we depriving anyone of life? Don't think so. Your liberty. Well, that's true, but we're actually putting you back in the country you're from. We're returning you home. So are you obligated to get due process? But let's really talk about what due process is. So they say without due process of law. And it's also in the 14th Amendment as well. That one just refers to the fact that the states are not immune to this due process. So it just basically says the states have to adhere to due process as well. So is due process well defined? Is there a book? Is there a bunch of Supreme Court rulings on what is the whole concept of due process? Well, it depends. And that's what these rulings say. It depends on what's going on. Due process can mean different things depending on what the proceeding is. So if you're in a criminal case and you're a citizen of the United States, there's due process for your criminal case. And usually when they refer to it as due process, I mean, because the whole court process is pretty much well defined in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, I'm allowed to a speedy trial, which is defined, that's actually is well defined, 180 days, 6 months, very well defined nationally, a speedy trial of my peer, of juror of my peers. And I have the right to have an attorney. That's very well. So the whole process of doing a jury trial, a criminal trial, is very much laid out. And we've done it a lot. We know how it works. So if we're going to deport someone, do they get a trial? No, that's not due process. So the question is, what is due process for immigration, for deporting someone? So let's talk about some of the other things. What's the definition of excessive bail? That's in the amendment, the Bill of Rights. Well, that really hasn't been well defined either. And that's been all over the place here recently too. So if I were to argue this is excessive bail, like if it was a bail issue, is there some number? If somebody could say, well, wait a minute, you were charged with first degree assault and we have a number, which is 50,000, you know, well, okay, that's well defined, but it's not. Excessive bail is not well defined. It's really up to the judge. Cruel and unusual punishment. What's the definition of that? Don't know. Some places they are, well, you can't put people to death or certain ways. You can't put them to death certain ways. That would be cruel and unusual punishment. Putting them in solitary for 24 hours. That's cruel and unusual punishment. So there's a lot of arguments about these things that are written in the Bill of Rights, but understand there's no easy thing. And that's why Trump looks so perplexed when they're talking about, you know, this due process, is because he's going, what does it mean? The courts don't know what it means. So how is Donald Trump going to know it? He doesn't know what it means. Pam Bondi doesn't know what it means. So there has been some hearings, but this is a complete red herring, and you need to understand that. There has been a few rulings, though, but this is just, again, to run out the clock. Basically, what due process means, every person is heard in an appropriate procedure depending on the nature of the case. Okay, you're heard. Most of these illegal aliens have already had their due process. And the people who haven't, If you want to actually say, okay, you know, we've got, what do we have? We have 8 to 11 million that were brought in during the Biden administration. They weren't given due process. Oh, what? So if you want to talk to someone who did not do due process for illegal sneaking into our country illegally, it was Joe Biden, because there was a process. The process is that when you're caught, you're detained, we identify who you are, and then we hold you until you can have a deportation hearing where you can be heard in an appropriate procedure, depending on the nature of the case, where you can be heard by an immigration officer or someone in authority who can determine whether you can stay or if you need to leave. Joe Biden didn't follow due process. Joe Biden violated the U.S. Constitution, and his immigration, Magorkas, all those guys, they're the ones who violated their due process, not Donald Trump. So what happened was, and this is all per their plan, they didn't want to give them due process because they knew that 95% of them, if they saw a judge, one, they're not going to hang around being locked up. Because every day I'd go in there and say, okay, you're still waiting to see a judge, and it could be 6 months to a year. You can stay here in this detention center, or you can go back to your home country. Well, after 3 or 4 months, they're going to say, screw this, I want to go home. And then you're going to have a lot of people that are going to self-deport. They're going to say, put me on a bus back to Mexico, I'm out of here. But the ones who stay are going to say, I want to talk to a judge. I have a legitimate reason. I'm sure they're given an opportunity to document why are you coming to our country? And then we'll afford them their due process. Joe Biden didn't give them that opportunity. He's the one who did not have due process for these 8 to 11 million people. What did he do? What did they say? Catch and release. He's the one in the middle of the night. They're making a big deal with Donald Trump about taking these planes and going to El Salvador or Venezuela or whatever and sending them back to their home countries. It's where they're from. That's what the citizenship's from. And we're giving them a free ride home. But Biden put them on planes, buses, and whatever, and snuck them, hid them in the middle of the night without due process, and dropped them all over the country. So he basically enabled human trafficking. Joe Biden, President Biden, is the largest human trafficker of any single individual in the United States. He human trafficked millions of people, spread them all over the country, lost hundreds of thousands of unaccompanied minors that are probably all in sex work at this point, all because of Joe Biden. So if you want to lock on to someone who did not show these individuals due process and murdered, allowed for millions of people or thousands of people to be raped, killed, and whatever, it was former President Joe Biden. He's to blame for all of this. So this is all their plan, though. Spread them all over the country. We can't logistically work it out. So let's do the math. How many immigration judges do you think they are? Some of you might know. The answer is around 700. And currently, those 700 judges have 5,000 cases each that they're backed up. That's a lot of flipping cases. That's 3.5 million cases. Wait a minute. Biden let 8 to 11 million into this country. So if we're now going to turn around and say, we need to show them all due process, it would take 30 years for those 700 immigration judges to deal with it with no other new cases coming in. That's their plan. We can't logistically solve the problem. And Trump knows this. He knows there's no way, if we go by what they want to do, what they deem to be due process, where they all get a hearing or a trial, there's no way. There's no way we can do this. So they're going to run out the clock. And then, you know, the next conspirator in the human trafficking process, i.e., Democrat president, is just going to allow it to happen again. If we want to solve this problem, we need 6,000 more judges immediately. I'll be one. I volunteer. I'll do it. at a cost of $90 billion over the next 3 years to process all these cases. And the bottom line is, Trump had it right last time. He had due process. You came to the gate. Don't you know, illegally cross our border. Come to the door, knock on my door. Come on in, sign the guest book, and tell me why you want to be in the United States and sign up, or you know, get on the list to be accepted. We take so many per year. We have a list. We just haven't used it for years on how many numbers we allow from each country. We just don't use that list anymore. Why? We're just letting everybody in. And then you can come through the right way. And oh, by the way, all the people that have come in the right way are pissed off that all this has happened. So you let them in, sign the guest book, and then you say, okay, now go back to your home country. Unless you can explain to us a reason that your life's in danger, we'll contact you. We'll do due process, and we will process your application with due process, and you can come into this country legally. So if somebody were to invade our country, would we, after we stop the invasion, say, okay, we got to show every enemy combatant due process to see if they should stay or go? No. You make them leave, especially if they're enemy combatants. And then if somebody wants to come back, you know, there's people even from Germany years ago that probably fought for the Germans during World War II that at some point legally immigrated to the United States. So we've let people in. It's not that we aren't good, open-armed people and welcome our friends from other countries to immigrate to the United States, but you got to do it the right way. So the person who did not give all of these illegal immigrants their due process is former President Joe Biden. Trump is looking at a situation that is unfixable. There's no way that he can, because of what Biden created, and Mayorkas, or I can't say his name, but the dumbass, there's just no way to deal with it at this point. I mean, that's the problem. So we're in this crazy situation. So what should people like us do? Just average, I don't want to say average, citizens of America, what should we be doing? Now, here's what I would tell you. I don't take a trust me card from Donald Trump. I don't take a trust me card from anybody. You got to prove to me your actions. And right now, Donald Trump's kind of out on a limb a little bit. He's out there with the tariffs and some of these other things. And I'm just sitting back going, I hope this works out. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Don't have to give him a trust me card. I question everything every day. But until he proves me wrong, I mean, the whole, talk about tariffs a little bit, just here at the end. There's nothing wrong with reciprocal tariffs. And they're making these statements like, where did this come from? It's like Trump came out of nowhere with all this. And he's been talking about tariffs since the 80s. And reciprocal tariffs are so simple. They should have been done 30, 40. It should have been a given from the beginning when we decided to tariff other countries that, look, whatever you tariff us, we just want fair trade. Whatever you tariff us, we're going to tariff you. We open markets. If you want 0, 5, 10%. And a lot of these small nations understand this, and Trump's 100% correct. It's only been in the last 100 years that we've had income tax. Before that, the feds made all their money through tariffs. Well, they wanted more because they're greedy. Understand, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. As soon as you get elected to public office, you love that money. You love the power, and you just want more of it. So they wanted more taxes, more money. So we got into this vicious cycle with income tax as well. So if you really think about it, though, tariffs are a consumption tax. What's the only way a tariff can impact me as a consumer here in the United States? If I buy something. Well, geez, all Donald Trump is telling me is to buy USA. Now, some things I can't do that. It sounds like pharmaceuticals and high-tech chips, kind of screwed. And little cheap stuff. Well, do I really need little cheap stuff? I don't know. I don't know what matters and what doesn't matter. But I know that tariffs are not going to impact me that much in the foreseeable future unless I go out and buy a Volvo or an Audi or something like that that's a high ticket value. And guess what? I'm going to go to the automotive industry or to my local car lot, and I'm going to see all these different cars, and it's going to be like, oh, geez, guess I need to buy American. And oh, by the way, some of these Hondas are more American made than Fords. So don't be fooled by that. We need to understand exactly what's going on in this country. And I think, I hope, knock on wood, that Donald Trump's going to get to the bottom of this. But understand, I think it's great that Donald Trump did not win the last election or the one before in 2020. I think that is the best thing that could have happened to this country, because we saw those morons, idiots, dumbasses run our country for 4 years, and Trump got to see it as well. Now he's been reelected and he knows I've got 4 years. I got 4 years to do this. So I'm going to go into this full steam ahead and I'm going to solve all these problems as fast as I can. The Democrats can't absorb that because, again, they want to do the stall game, and Trump can't play that game. He's got to solve everything in the next 18 months for the midterms. So tariffs and things like, he's got to get the tariffs worked out. He's got to let the market recover. He's got to lay into this whole depression, inflation BS that everyone's talking about, and then move forward.
Mark?
Yeah, Mark, you got.
Yeah, can I say something?
Absolutely.
I don't know if you ever listened to this podcaster named Theo Vaughn. He's from Louisiana. He's real popular, and Trump went on his podcast, and they say that kind of swung the election in his favor. He's just a homeboy, you know. Anyway, he said in his experience going to different venues around the country where he performs, he goes through these small towns, and he said they're just closed up. You know, there's just no jobs there. They're bored.
Right.
And he said, and, you know, that's where most of the, I call it Wall Street versus Main Street. Wall Street doesn't, the people that are invested in Wall Street don't really see those places. And so it's not affecting them, but those places used to be vibrant. And so bringing jobs, it's not tariffs, you know, as a way to make money, but it's a way to get them to come back to America and manufacture in America so that our people will have an increased standard of living like the people in Chinese are now getting. They're getting an increased standard of living. So our people need a little of that too.
And you're 100% correct. I used to, my dad was in the Air Force, so we traveled. But during my college years, my parents lived in Kentucky. That's where they're from. And down by Lake Cumberland, if anyone knows where Lake Cumberland is, beautiful lake, there used to be an underwear factory, Fruit of the Loom underwear factory. And that hired so many local people that as soon as they got out of high school, certain individuals would go straight, you know, and go work at that factory. And there was a bunch of factories making bourbon, obviously. And you're right, in these back hills, I don't want to say back hills, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Not big cities. They would have one or two, three or four factories. And the people who made the decision, these are millionaires typically, they knew that by putting a factory there, they helped the community and they're going to have a solid workforce. All that's gone. And I think that's what you're saying.
Right, exactly. And you know what's really so sad? It's like ironic. When you go to these small towns, all they really have is a Dollar General.
Right.
And the Dollar General is full of made in China products. So it's like they gave up the jobs so that they could buy cheap, you know, what I call baubles.
Stop.
I know we import more than just baubles, but I mean, a lot of it is Amazon dresses that are made in China, you know, Temu and all those. And so they've kind of traded that out because, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. I mean, we buy what we're given. I look all over for made in America, and I have to go to consignment shops. I have to go to antique shops. You know, I have to go to garage sales just to find fabric, you know, that was made in America, good stuff. And so, you know, he's just trying to give America a piece of the pie that it used to have, because there are a lot of poor people out there that are trying, you know, they're not on welfare. They're trying to make it. And they need good paying jobs. And, you know, that is just the one thing I think the multinational oligarchs are not going to give on. But they need to give a little, you know, they need to. They're the middleman. They're manufacturing cheap in China and selling high over here. They need to give a little and get some of these jobs back. And so, you know, I'm hoping we can I'm hoping our Uniparty Congress won't slow it down.
Well, hopefully we can stay the, and that's kind of where I was leading to, is we can hold the course. And like I said, I don't give out trust me cards, but I'm willing to wait. This really isn't impacting me so much. But you're right about these small town out in the middle of, there's so many of these warehouses or factory buildings that are sitting empty in these small towns, and they need the people to say, wait a minute, you know, Trump's laid out the tariffs. We've resolved all this issue with trade. It's now cost effective for me to open a plant in Kentucky, Louisiana, Tennessee, all these different places, especially because those buildings are still around. The buildings are there.
Yeah,
So,
before they go to seed, right? Well, thank you, Mark, for filling in. I enjoyed hearing it.
you
Thanks.
bet. Hopefully next time, you know, we're kind of wrapping things up. And thank you for joining in. I love talking to people. I hate hearing myself talk for an hour. I usually bring John on with me and we talk about law enforcement stuff. And I got to tell you, just as a teaser going forward, and unfortunately, John's kind of going through some personal stuff right now and he's got a lot of work. We're, again, I always say this, we're swamped. I just had a tremendous case up in Anchorage that I would love to talk about. I got to wait till the final judge ruling, which should be out in the next month, and talk about some of these things. And again, understand, you know, they used to have that old show. What is it? Girls behaving poorly or whatever. You know, well, you got some cops doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And that's where John and I really help. And I'd love to tell people about the different court cases where we've had an impact and helped individuals that have been wrongly accused. To bring out and show that, you know, you don't have a case that you think that you do. So we're wrapping things up. It's a Friday. Chuck and Julie should be back Monday. Everything will be wonderful. You can get back to the local state stuff. Hopefully I didn't bore you too much talking about, I again, keep watching about this judge in Milwaukee. You're going to see a whole bunch of Democrats backing her up and saying she's just trying to protect the poor immigrant who's beating the shit out of his wife. Well, okay, that just shows the whole priorities of these liberals is that they're all concerned about not the victims, about these individuals that are brutalizing our communities, and they happen to be illegal aliens, and we let them in. So, everybody have a great weekend. See you next time.